Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Policing Matters on PoliceOne.com. I'm your host, Jim Dudley. Hey, check us out on the YouTube channel as well. The Policing Matters podcast is live on the YouTube channel under Police One. All right. Well, we know that leadership is vital to every law enforcement organization. It is needed now. It's critically needed now as much as any time in the history of American policing. And my guest today is recently retired Captain William Frost, acting chief at the time, who took his 27 years of law enforcement experience. And he wrote a book on leadership titled Leadership in Law Enforcement, 10 Key Traits, and what law enforcement agencies can do to develop these in future leader. Well, we could sure use it. Hey, welcome to Policing Matters, Bill Frost.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It is an honor and a pleasure.
And it was an honor and a pleasure to read your book. I got the advanced copy, and you know, some great leaders that you reference there. You talk about mentorship. I want to get into that, but you served in a relatively small department. Where did you begin your research? What was your impetus to put the book together?
Well, it all started when I was going through my master's degree program, and we were looking for topics for master's theses. And at the time, I was reading a book called The Art of Command, Character is Everything. It was by Edward Prewer, who wrote about military leadership. And as I was reading that, he went and he talked to numerous four-star generals and three-star generals and asked them about certain characteristics that were crucial to law enforcement and or to military. So as I'm reading that, I'm going, this is needed for law enforcement. So we need to do something like this because nobody really has purely done a true study of leadership characteristics. So as I was thinking about that, I said, I'm going to do it. And then I decided, you know what, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to try my best to get the best comments I can from people. And I took it from there. And then as I started doing the research through individual interviews with people, I did a lot of studying through books, went through numerous police biographies, Police One, I referenced numerous times, and just did a deep dive to find current law enforcement leaders, historical law enforcement leaders, and find certain characteristics that are needed in law enforcement. And what then I asked, what could we do to build these? And I just took it from there and amended. And as after my thesis was done, I continued working on it, fine tuning it, and then adding more of my personal experiences in there as well. So I wanted to make it as relevant to the person who's working at a 35,000 strong department, such as NYPD, or as relevant as somebody who's working at a department of six.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, more than half of the agencies in America, law enforcement agencies, are smaller departments under 50 people, sometimes, you know, fewer than 20. You know, it's great that you decided to codify it, put it in a book. You know, so many people, great leaders, leave the profession and, you know, their legacy was their time in the agency and maybe didn't leave so much for the rest of us in the wake. But you talk about leadership as one of the 10 most important traits. Mentorship is one of those traits that you express several times using some iconic leaders. Who were yours and why? Who were your mentors? How did you get them to be mentors?
Mentorship for me, I kind of ran into, and the people that ended up being my mentors sometimes were complete surprises. The first mentor is my father. He did 32 years as a police officer, 15, last 15 as police chief, highly successful in his career. And being from a small city of Sausalito, he still was able to make numerous contacts. He knew Daryl Gates. He knew Tom Cahill. He knew individuals that were namesakes of the profession. And he encouraged me to get into the profession, never forced me, encouraged me, and explained how important leadership was, showed me the traits through his daily activities as a law enforcement officer or just as my father. And so he was my number one mentor. He taught me how to be a man and how to be a police officer. Then as I got into the profession, I was lucky. I had two great captains, Don McQuarrie and Jim Hyatt, that took their time, mentored me, got me prepared, selected me for assignments, and gave me challenges. One selected me to be a detective that opened up so many doors. And the other, when I promoted to sergeant, he was there to help guide me throughout the way. But also I had a chief named Scott Pollen, came over from Vacaville PD, became our department's head. And through his everyday performance, through the way he treated people, through his competency, and how he took the time to say, hey, this is why I'm doing this. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to allow you to have the final say on how things happen, but here's some guidance. And his leadership philosophy. And he taught me the first thing is it's no longer about you. It's about what you could do for the others. And that just resonated to me like crazy. But then as I progressed, I always knew that coming from a small agency, and like you said, we make up actually more than half. 88% of law enforcement departments, I believe, are under 50, and like 77% are under 24. So I knew I had to look and try to get this best, be prepared for anything that happened at any time, and wanting to progress in the agency, I actually took it upon myself to reach out to well-known law enforcement leaders to pick their brains. And I got lucky. William Bratton, he took the time to talk to me as I was a young detective or as I worked my way up through the ranks to share his leadership philosophies. He let me pick his brain. The deceased John Timoney, I don't think people realize how much of an impact he had on law enforcement and how he was so far ahead of the profession and instituting policies and leadership principles. And he took the time to talk to me, and I was able to correspond with him only a couple of weeks before he died. And he made comments like he was afraid for the leadership in law enforcement right now. There were people that were not able to take a stand or say what needed to be said. But then he actually said, Bill, based on what you've told me, this is not the case with you. And that encouraged me to go harder and look harder. And then just being willing to reach out to people and talk to people and putting myself out there. People say, well, you come from a no-name department. You're so small. Why are you reaching out for these stars? And my philosophy was that if you think little, you're going to perform little. You'll be little. If you think big, you're going to accomplish more. So just going out there, talking to people, allowing yourself to be open to learn, and realizing that even you could be mentored by poor performers. We had a chief who was nice person, horrific chief. And I learned more about what not to do from watching that individual. And in some ways, they were a mentor to me by doing the wrong thing. So putting yourself out there, studying the profession, and being willing to go, you know what, let me learn, talk to. That's kind of how I fell into that mentorship.
Yeah, no, I mean, you bring up some great points there, and you stole some of my thunder by what you just said, because, I mean, you talk about so many great icons, not only Bill Bratton, but Ramsey in Philadelphia, Daryl Gates, Brobeck, Timoney, and even my old friend Pete Hurley, who always offers great advice to me. Love the guy. I like your selection, because one common trait among all of them is to be able to make decisions and stand up to criticism, as opposed to being that agency leader that sort of waves like a flag in the wind, right? Tries to stay in the middle, doesn't want to be a bad guy, doesn't want to disappoint people. But honestly, I think every one of those leaders has been criticized, if not by the media, then by their own troops, or certainly by the community. And I think that's a sign of a great leader. You can't make everybody happy all the time. Still, I think that politics plays a part in being a chief. I mean, we've seen some just great chiefs be fired by their organizations, and you can't really defend the troops or do much for your troops or your community if you get fired. So that's a fine line, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. So when it comes to that hard part of decision-making and being able to speak the truth to power, you have to do it in such a way that you are ensuring that you'll be able to continue on. However, there are certain instances where it gets so bad where you have to go, I'm done. I can't go forward. But yeah, it's a fine line to walk, because if you're out of the agency, you can no longer impact it. But then again, if you're not telling the city manager, the city council, other politicians, commissioners, what is truly happening, you're not really doing your job, and you're not supporting your department, your community, because you represent more than just the individuals that wear the star on their shirts. You when you're chief of police, you represent that city. I like the TV show Blue Bloods, and one point comes up, and it was a comment about how important police chiefs or police commissioners are and how well known they are. There was a fight between police officers and firefighters, and the fire commissioner makes a comment and so upset that NYPD gets so much press. And later on, the commissioner, Tom Selleck's role, says, hey, why do these guys have a chip on their shoulder? Well, who's the fire commissioner? I don't know. Well, who's the police? Well, everybody knows. And it's because they look for the leadership. If you're the police chief, you're the leader of that organization. You're the leader of the community. And the community is going to come to you with so many weird questions and so many ideas. I mean, when my dad was part of his chief time was during the 1980s, during the time where AIDS, HIV first came. And there were community members coming to my dad going, chief, can we do about preventing AIDS coming in to our city? And it's like, I'm a cop. I'm not a doctor, but you know what? He was that point of leadership. He was that point of strength for the community. So you have to tell it how it is sometimes, but when the decisions get made, you have to then sell it as your own. But once it comes a time, something comes that's illegal, unethical, or immoral, that's when you have to step down and say why. But hardest thing is playing that role and making that decision and being able to go, hey, this is what, anytime you make your decision, you have to be able to explain it and back it up. And you have to do that to your boss, your city manager, your mayor, or to the people on the streets, your officers and the community members. So it's walking that line, but also being true to yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, so far you've talked about competence and fairness. You've talked about communication as being a great trait. Of the many surveys that we've done at Police One, officers who take the survey often talk about competency among our leaders. And we know how important that is, not just being able to be successful in testing. And every organization has somebody shoot up through the ranks because they're a good test taker, but also in doing and leading by modeling the behavior that you're seeking from your troops. You have one of your chapters is presence and decision-making. How's that fit in?
Well, it's important. You cannot be seen as a leader if you're never around. You cannot be seen as a leader as when the decision is called upon, you waver, you wring your hands and go, I don't know, let me stand by. One chief I had used to always make the comment, I need a defensible position on everything that came their way. And it's like, hold on, Nana, we need a decision, right or wrong. And if it's wrong, we could fix it. If it's right, we're moving ahead full steam. But it's making the hard calls. Sometimes those hard calls are things that are going to bring you backlash, but you got to base everything that's right. And a lot of the times people are going to look at you, if you're that seen as that person who makes that hard call, they're going to look at you and go, okay, this is a person I could trust. I may not always agree with them, but they're looking at the full circumstances. They're willing to put themselves on the line and they're able to make a decision in the moment. As you know, as well as anybody in law enforcement, you have decisions that you can wait 6 months to make, or you have decisions you have to make within 2 seconds. And you have to be able to see that. when it's one of those 2 second decisions, you can't be going, oh, let me think about this. Let me ask everybody's opinion. Let me do this. No, you got to go, this is what we're going to do. If it's something that's more, you know what, we have time to study it, you could get other people's perspectives, but you still have to be that person willing to stand by your decision. If you make it, you have to stand by it. Presence goes along with that. Mm-hmm. If you're saying I am the head of the organization, or if I'm a command member in the organization, you have to be there to influence your officers. You have to be seen that you at work. You have to be seen in the community. You have to be seen communicating with them at the time, in good times and bad times. Something happens at 3 o'clock in the morning, you better be rolling out there to help your people. It's different. I mean, if you're working in an organization of 1,500 people, the 4-star doesn't have to show up at every shooting if it's not a high profile shooting, because it's going to happen. However, something big happens, you need to be there, and you'll know what's big because you'll know your community. And another presence I always like to talk about is, and for some strange reason, unlike the fire department, is when their leaders move up the ranks, they stay in uniform. Well, in law enforcement, it's when our people start moving up the ranks, we start breaking down, we stop wearing the uniform. And it's like, well, hold on, for this uniform is a symbol of your profession. It's a symbol of your rank. It's, you're wearing this to show that you're still part of the organization. You're still an officer. You may have different collar insignia. You may have a gold badge instead of a silver badge, but you're still in uniform. You're still part of the team. And that installs hope, that installs pride. I used to wear my uniform as much as I possibly could. I probably wore it 95% of the time when I was in administration. And not only did I wear my regular uniform, if I was in my Class A uniforms, I would have my ribbons on. And the reason why is I wanted to pay respect, not to myself, but for the individuals that did great things but were never honored for it. That's something I learned from my uncle, who was an infantryman in World War II. He said, why do you wear your ribbons? You wear them for your buddies that never got what they should have got. But also, the community looks towards law enforcement to be a stable, protective influence. And when you're in your uniform, that shows that. It shows that there's a sense of strength here and security. And they, when you walk into a room, it's like, hey, you know what? The police are here. That causes a feeling that, you know what, they're here to protect. Also, things are going to get done. So being there, being present, engaging your officers, engaging the community, it's just, you can't spend every moment of your life in your department. We know that. You got outside influences. You got family. You got interests. You need to get away. Mm-hmm. But you need to be at your department, establishing a presence of being capable, being there to help people, being seen in the good times and the bad times, and showing that you want to be in that organization. And a lot of times leadership is just, you manage things just by walking around and being seen, having those conversations in the hallway. That establishes trust within your troops. And the more you're present and the more people see you as someone who's willing to make a decision when it's called upon, those are two key traits that they're going to look and view you more as a leader, because they will see that they want to be here. They're willing to make the call.
Yeah, no. And it's great. It's great getting input from, your command people and any stakeholder in a decision. But there's also that you're never going to reach consensus, I'd say 90% of the time. And there's that paralyzation by analyzation. And we've had chiefs like that in my department where crisis would pass because a decision couldn't be made. And when I had time, I tried to seek input from others, didn't want to be a dictator. But there's also that instance where a decision needs to be made, not now, but right now. And you need to have leadership to make those calls. And one of our surveys asked if age should be a consideration in promoting within departments. We've seen acting chiefs and chiefs of agencies as young as 23 and 24 years old. Does age make a difference? Well, you could tell by my tone what I believe. But I know you talk about education, but doesn't, you know, the School of Hard Knocks, doesn't personal experience and job experience count as well?
Yes, it does. And when I talk about education, I talk about whole education, total education, not just formal education at school. I have informal and formal. Part of your informal education is experience. It's what you learn in the job. It's what you learn walking a beat. It's what you learn talking to your community members. It's what you learn through your successes and failures. And like you said, we start seeing people that are 23 and 24 year olds as acting chiefs or chiefs. Number one, I have a hard time putting in a person who's 23 or 24 into a sergeant's position, let alone a chief's position. And it's excellence knows no age, but you need to have time and rank in order to learn. I started out as a reserve officer at 19. So I made my way through the ranks at young ages, but just because you're young doesn't guarantee you should be pushed up. Just because you have a degree doesn't guarantee you should be pushed up. When I speak about education, I want lifelong learners. I want people that are continuing to better themselves. We want people that are looking to develop their skills, expand their knowledge base. And like you said, years of experience will do that. That will give you a lot of on-the-job perspective and practical knowledge you're going to need, because the book doesn't give you so much. And in addition to street time for that informal education is, what are you doing to better yourself? Or are you taking classes on your own? Are you going to different seminars? Are you reading? Do you know about your profession? Because there's so much we lose in law enforcement because we're so focused on the crisis of the moment, we never look back in our history. And we need officers as part of their education to study our past, because every 20 years, law enforcement goes through the same cycle, the same scandals, the same issues. Why do we have the Rodney King incident? And 20 years later, or 30 years, we have Tyree Nichols. Why are we having these? Why do we have Rampart? Why do we have the Buddy Boys? Well, because these things go in cycles. And we aren't ready. We forget what we learned. And so we have to look back. Why are our chiefs of police putting out the same programs every 20 years and not knowing that they've done this already? They just don't have that perspective. We need to study people like August Woolmer, Bill Parker, Louis Valentine, Daryl Gates. We need to study Charles Ramsey, Lee Brown, Tom Cahill. Every decision these people made, and you can look right on your bookshelf, like my bookshelf. We have books about these people.
Yeah, I'm looking for my August Woolmer book written by my buddies Alex Gerald and Jeff Snipes.
I have it right up there on my shelf. It's amazing. But our officers need to know that, because that's part of their education. And then, yes, if you want to move up to the ranks, you need to have some formal education, because the public looks at that as a way of kind of validating. Hey, you know what? You got these skills. You got this. You're going up to higher command. You've got some better higher education. Also, studies have shown that if you go through higher education, you're allowed to look at things with a larger perspective. Sometimes you have a little bit better communication skills. You have some experience regarding dealing with different type, understanding different cultures, maybe a little bit more. And it gives you a knowledge. And also, the key thing is, for me, it shows that you could set your mind to an accomplishment and to a goal and achieve that. So that's what formal education does. It exposes you to different things, but you need to have informal and formal. And otherwise, you're an uninformed officer of any rank.
Yeah, so I totally get that. But I think about some really terrific police officers who didn't have the formal training, didn't go back to school, but just great cops. And then they hit that wall when they take promotional exams, because half of it is figuring out the exam. It's a shame. It's a shame that we don't, you know, we have such valuable time that we address training with, but it's not enough. And we should be presenting college level courses throughout an officer's tenure and offer them so they don't have to go off duty to a university. Maybe we could present them, during their course of duty or in short segments. I think that's something that we really lack in training and policing.
I agree 100%. Departments have to get fully behind their staff and help their staff. So you have to, as a law enforcement leader of any command rank, you have to be reaching out and gathering information about what kind of classes officers could take, what kind of online, in person, what are places offering, seeing if educational institutions around your agency will partner with you. LASO, they set up the Los Angeles Sheriff's Office College Program. I can't remember this exact name, but they've graduated something like 8,000 people through that program. And it gives discounts on books, discounts on classes. You have a good class schedule. But that encourages our officers to learn. Mm-hmm. I never had a problem with my officers spending a little time on their duty days, as long as they're getting the job done, they're handling their calls for service, and they're not slacking on what the priorities that need to be met. I had no problem with them reading a little bit of their class assignment. I had no problem with them sitting down and doing a little bit of their homework. Because how they're bettering themselves, they're going to give a better service to the community. They're going to be a better service for our officers. We all know people that have plenty of degrees and reach high rank, and they're horrific cops. They don't know what they're doing. We also have those people that have no schooling whatsoever, but on the beat, they're spectacular. And there could be, you could be a great beat officer and a horrible supervisor or command officer. You could be a horrible officer and be a great command officer, and vice versa. So it's, we have to prepare people. We have to realize not everybody is suited for every position, but we have to be looking out for every opportunity to continue our education. Because if our training programs are aimed at just meeting the bare minimum of what post requires, we're going to get bare minimum officers. So we have to look to go beyond, and that is partnering with our educational institutions to be able to offer more classes. But also it's for us to be, who are in the profession, to go out there and say, you know what, let me do some teaching and let's develop some classes aimed towards law enforcement. Because if you want to develop a bunch of officers, you could sit down with some, this is supervision 101, and be bored out of your mind talking about span of control. But, or you could go, you know what, we're going to talk today about Louis Free. Let's talk about his. We're going to today talk about Bill Bratton. Okay, let's go through the stories. Let's do this. Let's learn. Let's talk about education through great events. Max Schellenberger. Oh, who's that? Well, you know what? He was a huge, impactful person at NYPD. Teddy Roosevelt. What is Teddy Roosevelt? Teddy Roosevelt was an NYPD commissioner. Oh, I never knew that. Well, you need, there's a lot of stuff that if we tell our officers about this spectacular history, they would get more interested and maybe want to go in. We have to learn from our history. We have to embrace our history, good and bad, and use that as teaching points.
Yeah, for sure. And we talk about leadership in policing. I mean, you mentioned all these great leaders, and they all have something to say. And I got to say this about education, that how we meet it out is important too. When you have two lieutenants as the most trained officers in your agency, that means somebody else isn't getting some of that training. So we really need to be careful in making training available to everyone in the agency. Somebody's got to monitor who's getting what and who needs training. Maybe, Volin told somebody to go to training that they might need, as opposed to, the ones they sign up for everything. And That means they're not on the street for a lot of that time.
Yeah. I mean, you look at it, is we have to develop training plans that are realistic, and we have to then follow those. Because if you're in a special assignment, you should get special training. But also if you're an off brand new officer, you should be able to look and go, okay, I mean, I know I'm going to be sent here. I'm going to be sent here. I'm going to be sent here. But at a certain point, we have to look at our officers. And you could do this small departments than you can in large departments. But in large departments, you have more resources to put on better training.
Sure.
And tailor make our training plan so they fit the needs of the officers as well as the needs of the organization. I mean, like you said, I worked with people that this person's away at training again, or the best trained person in the universe. And hey, I can't even get to go to basic accident investigator school. It's like, how does this happen? It was so funny. I remember we had one officer, good officer, went on to another agency, like many of our people do, because they look for different opportunities and different pay. But they had just come back from three different classes and they've given me a slip to go to another class. And I was in charge of training at the time. And I'm looking at them going, you've just been sent three other classes. Well, I know, but I really want to go to this class. Well, I totally understand you're a good cop, but I have this other officer who hasn't been to anything. So put in this request later and I'd love to send you to it, but you got to buy your time. And, oh, I totally understand it. And cool, that's not a problem. But then I had other officers that were, I put myself through this class. I want vacation time. I want to be reimbursed for everything. No, you did that on vacation time. What are you thinking? So you got to control it. And if you have a nice training program that's aimed towards your officers' goals, aimed towards your officers' interests that align with the department and the community's interests, you're going to be successful. The hard part is putting that plan together.
Yep. 100%. We've had people assigned to specialized units who couldn't get a class. And then we had people go to canine training when they were not assigned a canine. So yeah. Go figure. We talk about leadership in policing at the upper levels of command, but you also have leadership in a one-person car. How do we convey that? How do we empower our troops to be leaders, to take those leadership roles in community projects, community meetings, taking over critical incident scenes, having the confidence and the backing to get out there and assert themselves?
That starts from day one in the academy, goes through the field training program, and should be part of every day of an officer's career. Is we have to make them feel like they have ownership for what they're doing on the beat. In small agencies, that's a little bit easier because when an officer shows up to the scene, no matter, it could be a dog barking call or it could be an attempted murder. Many times, guess what? That's been officer's call case from the beginning to the very end. You have to do all these different things. You have to learn from them and you have to step up and I need this done. I need this done. Bigger agency, an officer could show up to that attempted murder and go, okay, we put him in the back of an ambulance. I'm going to hold the crime scene. Let's call the detectives. And they don't have that experience of being able to make those calls. But when we are developing our younger officers, those people, the single person in the car, that's up to our corporals, our sergeants, our lieutenants, our captains, and our chief to tell these officers, I want you to make the calls. I want you to make the decisions. We want you to be the chief of your beat. We want you to be willing to go out there. And when they make a call, if it's the wrong call, we can't jump down their throat. So we have to use every opportunity, some opportunity to teach. And then we have to bring up, we have this assignment. I would like you to perform this. And it's sometimes you're going to have young officers not really wanting to do maybe a community program. Well, that's when you sometimes have to voluntell them to say, we're going to do this. I'm going to give you all the resources you need. This is your thing to run. If you need help, come to me. I'm not going to get in your way. I'm not going to bother you. I'm not going to micromanage you. It's about us empowering our people. And we have to do that on every level, from the officer, letting the officer run a neighborhood meeting, letting the officer deal with a quality of life enforcement problem on their beat. A bunch of people are drinking on the corner, causing disturbances. What are we going to do to deal with this? Mm-hmm. Then we move that up to the higher ranks, sergeants, allowing sergeants to start doing some lieutenant's work, allowing lieutenants to do captain's work and up and up and up. But we have to tell the officers from day one, you are not just the ants that run around. You are leaders here. People look at you, they assume that you're somebody who's going to make the call, somebody's going to make decisions, somebody's going to be there. So go ahead and do it. Right, yeah. Wrong, or indifferent. If it's right, great. If it's wrong, hey, we'll fix it. But you can't, we need people to, and we need to have that as part of our culture. And we have to develop that early on. And just giving people tasks, having them learn to do it. I mean, and that perfect example of learning from a task you may not want anything to do with. As a lieutenant, I'm sitting in a city management meeting, and the city manager starts talking about they're going to bring mobile showers in for the homeless population that will get washed and be able to get some services. And he starts talking, he starts looking at me, and this is what's going to happen. I'm going, why is he looking at me? I'm bumping my chief going, huh? Chief's looking, I don't know. So then city manager goes, and Bill, the reason why I'm looking at you is you're going to run this program. And I'm going, whoa, I've never even heard of this program. But it got me working with a bunch of individuals and making decisions and making calls and making connections on things I would have never been exposed to. Mm. And it put me in an uncomfortable position to learn. And I thank that city manager all the time because he gave me opportunities that were beyond law enforcement to go in and learn more stuff about what's going to be needed. And that we have to do that for our younger officers as well. Hey, you know what? Here is this. Here is a, we want to look at new batons. Think about a proposal. Hey, what's going on with this part of their beat? What's going on with, have a meeting with this. They want to talk about stranger danger. Well, I don't know anything about it. Well, learn, do a little studying, whatever you need, I'm right here. So we got to push them a little bit at the same time as pulling back and just allowing them to do, go beyond their rank. We need them to think beyond, I'm just this, I'm just this. Because everybody in a law enforcement uniform is a leader. Different styles of leader, different responsibilities. But you're a leader from day one. That badge should, instead of just saying officer, should say leader.
Absolutely. Hey, reading for, I got to wrap this up. We're reading your book and so many great tips in there. What does a new leader absolutely need to learn before assuming command? One thing.
Most important thing is culture. You got to understand the culture of your organization because that could be completely different. If you're inside the organization, you may know some information, but you need to know more now because you're going to view at it different. So you have to learn the culture that you didn't know about. And that's all through conversations. You're coming in from the outside. You got to go into your agency, learn the culture, know what this agency does, what do they stand for? And you learn that through communication, by being present, by being there to learn. So you got to talk to people. Watch, look, and then realize the culture of the agency is what makes it. If you want to fix it, it's going to be a long-term thing, but get to know your people, get to know your that agency's culture, get to know everything you can. And you have to do that by talking to as many people as possible. So more communication, as many conversations as possible, and just putting yourself out there to learn and to be met and to talk.
Got it. All right. Hey, thanks so much. We're going to see a link at the bottom of our show notes to see where your book is. Thanks for being on the show, Captain and author William Frost on leadership and author of The Leadership in Law Enforcement, 10 Key Traits, What Law Enforcement Agencies Can Do to Develop These in Future Leaders. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this great opportunity. And I want to thank all the serving law enforcement officers for everything they do every single day. It was wonderful to be part of you guys. And I have trust and faith in the future. You're going to do a, continue to do a wonderful job.
Awesome. All right. Hey, to our listeners, thanks so much for listening. Let me know what you think. What's a trait that we didn't cover today? Let me know. Drop me an email at policingmatters@policeone.com. policingmatters@policeone.com. Hey, take good care, be safe, and I hope to talk to you again real soon.